I'm Steve Buss, and I am very honored to be sitting on with a gentleman I've known for quite a number of years. In fact, I don't know if you remember the first time I met you, Hal, but we were doing a radio interview just like this one.
Got me on that one.
For those of you who are familiar with Hal, he is a B-17 pilot, a combat veteran who was shot down and managed to get back and continue flying B-17s. Flew EIA's B-17 for a number of years and had his retirement flight a couple of years ago right here at Oshkosh. And it's been a stellar career. But Hal, let's go back to the beginning. How did you get started in aviation? What was your inspiration?
Well, the first thing I ever saw was a Pitcairn autogyro flying over my grandmother's house. And I said, that's got to be fun. I got to get part of that. And later, and about, I think I was a sophomore in high school, I used to buy newspapers at 2 cents, sold them for 3 cents. If I sold 30 a day, I made a dollar and a half a week. I walked 4 miles to a little airport and got flew in a Ronica C3, which is called a flying bathtub, two-cylinder, horizontally opposed, 38 horsepower, cost me $6 an hour dual. So I got to take off, make a couple of turns, and come back and land. Then I walked 4 miles back home. Next week I started the same thing. So that's where I got started in aviation. Now, for 14 years I was a principal inspector with the FAA after I came out of the military. And I used to have people come in and tell me how difficult it was to get flying time. I never did tell them my story that I just told you, but I said, yeah, I understand.
Well, after you got your flying started, you joined the military. Was there a particular inspiration that caused
you to
join?
We had a guy named Hitler over there on the other side of the water, and he was screwing up everything, and we thought that he shouldn't be doing that. So during that particular time, everybody was involved. I wanted to fly and fight, and they gave me the opportunity. I got to go through flight school. I graduated in July the 28th, 1943. So I left there. I wanted to fly P-38s, but they said no. I was in the top 10 of my class, so they put me as an aircraft commander on a B-17 at Sebring, Florida. So went to Sebring, got there the night of the 3rd. The morning of the 4th, I got married and went out to the air base, and I had a new life altogether. I was a married man and flying the biggest airplane in the world at the same time.
So you went from two engines on the P-38 to the 4 on the B-17. Was that a disappointment when that happened, or were you just itching to get into action?
Well, I wanted to go. I wanted to get involved. Everybody did. You know, after Pearl Harbor Day, the people were lined up around the block trying to get into the military. And I was so fortunate to be able to do what I did, to get into aviation and then to fly the B-17. And actually, as you mentioned a moment ago, when I retired here in 01, this was part of a plan, because actually I flew a B-17 over a period of 58 years. The last the EA B-17 I flew it for 23 years. So I guess you wanted me to talk, didn't you? So what happened is all part of a goal. I've set several goals in my life, and one of them was to fly till I was 80. So I was 80 years old in 10 days, and I made my last flight right here with my family here, and 80,000 people, and Chuck Yeager and Bud Anderson flying top cover for me, just like the old days. So what it worked out to be, since 1994, I was the last current combat aircraft commander from World War II. So based on what I did to fly to 01, I was the only aircraft commander of World War II to actively and currently fly a B-17 in 2 centuries and 2 millenniums. And they ain't going to take that away from me.
That's right. That is a very unique accomplishment. And Hal, we're very pleased that you were able to continue your B-17 career with EIA's B-17. But let's go back to the military. It's the 40s. The war effort is on. You're an aircraft commander, young man in charge of a crew of 10.
Yep.
Were you worried about those kinds of responsibilities, or was it just everybody working together and you weren't really concerned and lived for today?
Well, yeah, there was a responsibility there because when we had our crew together, it just so happened that we had a party one night at one of the enlisted men's quarters, and several of the wives were there, and all the wives were saying, "Okay, Lieutenant, I want you to take care of my husband." And this one said it, and that one said it. And I looked around and said, "Yeah, this is going to be a double deal because I'm going to try to take care of them, but I want them to try to take care of me too, because they're the ones handling the guns. I'm flying the airplane, but they had all the equipment to take care of what was needed to be done." And it was a terrible responsibility. But the thing about it is when we were shot down in August the 13th of 1944, I only had 9 men on board, but we all got out and we all made it home. Some were captured, some evaded from the Germans, but through the training that we had, which I felt was great training throughout the military, we all made it back. So it's a thing that in combat, a lot of people don't think about it. They think that, okay, you know, you're thinking about mom and dad and cherry pie and the hometown, but no, what you're thinking about is the fact that you don't want to let your partner down. I don't care whether you're in a foxhole with another fella, and you know, he's your best friend. Your lives depend on each other. Same thing in a bomber. We had 10 people on board, as Steve said, and everybody did their job, and you could survive. But actually, people that work in combat, they're closer than family, I guarantee you.
We're talking with Hal Weakley, B-17 pilot from World War II, a great gentleman and a friend of EAA, and we're pleased to have him here on EAA Radio. And we are live from the Welcome Center. This is EAA Radio.
Now it's back live to the EAA Welcome Center for EAA Radio Live.
And we are back talking with Hal Weakley, B-17 pilot from World War II, and a gentleman who flew EIA's B-17 for more than 20 years. Hal, you were talking just before the break about kind of a fateful mission that you had where you were actually shot down. Could you kind of walk the audience through what happened that day?
Yeah, we were bombing a bridge called La Manoir, which crosses the Seine River. Now, this was on August the 13th of 44, so this was after D-Day. And the reason we were bombing that bridge was to keep the Germans from taking all their tanks, trucks, heavy equipment, and personnel back into Germany and make it more of a fortress than what it was. We had 36 aircraft that day, and I was leading the squadron. And the idea is take the lead out, so they took me out. 35 made it back, but I didn't make it back. We were at 25,000 feet, and Well, at that time, they said, you know, you got to be the best pilot in the world to do what you're doing. And I think all of us thought we were the best pilots. I know I did. But what happened was number one engine was feathered. Number two was on fire. Number three was running away. Number four was doing well. But we had a fire in the radio room, had a fire in the tail, had all the hydraulics shot out and all the communications shot out. I didn't realize it till later that my wingmen, they had moved away, spread out, because they figured I was going to blow up any minute and they didn't want to get hit with all the shrapnel. But I thought I could see the English Channel, and I knew that the English had a real good air sea rescue program. And I said, you know, one engine, good, I can make that. Wrong again. The ball turret came up and said, no communication. So he told the radio man, and the radio man told the flight engineer, and the flight engineer told me, he said, "Hey, skipper, that wing's on fire between number two and the fuselage, and I don't care how good you are, the wing's on fire, you got a big problem." So I went to evacuation, evacuate the aircraft. And we all got out. That day we had 9 people on board. 7 people got Purple Hearts that day, including me. But we all got out on the chutes. We wore harnesses for chest backs. And of course you realize that I can't move my yoke back with a chest back on. So we kept our chest backs underneath the seat. So when I got out of the seat, I looked underneath the seat for my chest back and it wasn't there. And if this hot pilot ever panicked, I think it was right then. Because you look for your parachute, you ain't got one, you're in trouble. So I turned around and looked at my engineer, Joe, and he's standing there holding my parachute. I said, thank you, sir. I hooked that dude on and off we went. Now my co-pilot, he said, I didn't open my chute. Something happened and his chute opened right away. And he put him in a bad spot because I put it on autopilot, and you know I had number 4 engine still working pretty good. And it was making a circle to the left. And it made several circles, and on each circle, it got closer to him. And he's saying, you know, I could do all this, get out, and get run over by my own airplane. But on the third circle, as it went by, it blew up and came on down. But I didn't have that problem because they were machine gunning us from the ground in the parachutes. Matter of fact, my navigator had 13 holes in his chute. But I dropped 4 miles before I opened my chute. And it's you're dropping at 60 feet per second per second. That's 120 miles an hour. So it took me 4 minutes to get down. So I dropped 20,000 feet before I opened my chute. And then I pulled it. And then they didn't have the opportunity to get at me because it don't take long with a 24-foot emergency pack to hit the ground, which is what I did. Like I said, some of the boys were captured. Some evaded. I evaded in 2.5 weeks. On the way back, I met a guy named Bob Littlefield. Bob flew a P-51, and he and I are going back on a C-47 back to England, and we're flying low because they still had German aircraft, Goring's Yellow Noses from Abbeville, France. They were tough. They were out there looking for us. So we were down flying low, and it's bouncing around pretty good. Now Bob's laying on the seats, which are parachute seats, laying on the seats, and old smart aleck me, I went over and I hollered, "Break left." He broke left and rolled out on the floor. He wasn't too thrilled with that, so I had to use the restroom anyway. So I ran back to the tail, and now I want to tell you about this. The restroom facilities was a 5-gallon bucket that used the engine oil. You sat on that and did what you had to do. And so you can visualize this situation. This airplane splashing around. Well, the airplane wasn't splashing. The oil was splashing. And all of a sudden, I'm finished doing what I'm going to do. And there's no toilet tissue. Now, you got to think about that a minute. What do I do now? I don't know what you were going to do. I took my socks off and used my socks to wipe myself. But I thought you might get a kick out of that.
You know, out of all the places I thought this interview would go today, I didn't think we'd go there.
Yeah, you never know. Like I said, he asked me what time it is. I tell him I'd be able to watch. The ladies will appreciate this. If you remember, I said on August the 4th, I started flying B-17s and got married. August the 4th this year, we'll be married 67 years.
All right. Congratulations. Hal, our time is just about up for this segment, but you will also be receiving the key to the city tonight at Theater in the Woods about 8 o'clock, and Hal is receiving it on behalf of all veterans for our salute to veterans, so we appreciate you standing in for everyone who has served in peacetime and in wartime, and we'll look forward to that. So, and again, you're talking tomorrow. You'll tell the whole story at the Hilton Theater at the museum, and what time was that?
That's 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock in the morning.
10 o'clock in the morning. You can hear the entire story. And if you listen to it, you'll have to see if you get the version with the restroom quote in it, too. So, anyway, Hal Weekly, Mr. B-17, we call him. And we're very pleased to have you here today. And hope you have a great rest of the show. And you're listening to Live from the Welcome Center on EAA Radio.
EAA Radio is proudly supported by Rotorway International, the world's oldest and largest kit helicopter manufacturer, including the A600 Talon kit, on the web at rotorway.com.